Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall and you're listening to episode 9 of the Downtime Podcast, where we take you inside the world of elite mountain biking. First up, thanks to everyone that's been in touch since episode 8 with Katie Winton. We've had some amazing feedback and I'm really glad to hear that you've enjoyed it. It was also awesome to see her take second place at the Enduro World Series in Ireland this weekend, and also good to see Nico Mullally, our episode 2 guest, winning the US Open and beating Aaron Gwynn by a pretty narrow margin. You can find all of our episodes over on our website, which is downtimepodcast.com. If you want to know more about what's coming up and you want to keep in touch, then check us out on social media. We're Downtime Podcast on Instagram, The Downtime Podcast on Facebook, and Downtime Tweets on Twitter. We've got another great guest for you this week, as Tani Seagrave of FMD Racing joins us to chat. We talk about her performance at Lourdes, her post-race analysis, her uses of journaling and mini-goals, how she warms up for a World Cup, and many other things. Now, I have to admit, we had some internet trouble, so unfortunately the audio is not great in places. It starts off pretty bad, but if you give it a few minutes, it does improve. So please stick with us, and I hope it's still a very valuable conversation. Okay, without further ado, here's episode 9 with Tani Seagrave. Tani Seagrave, welcome to the Downtime Podcast. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
No worries. So let's wind the clock back a little bit. You had a pretty good season last year. You had a couple of second places. You got super close to Rachel at Lenzerheide. You also had a few injuries and a couple of probably fairly nasty crashes. Can you talk us through a little bit on how you reflect and take stock at the end of a season like that, and how you take that analysis and turn it into what you want to achieve over the winter?
I guess for us, as top athletes, you've got to look back on your season and, whether they're negatives or positives. I think you've just got to, Chris, my trainer, and I will sit down and go throughout the year, but also we reflect on it after, and you know, there's always stuff you've got to work on. There's even someone like, and there's always stuff that you can do better. So throw it down and we write it all down. We talk through it. We go through what went wrong, what we can work on, and we just build from there, really.
Okay. What sort of things did you identify from last season that you wanted to work on? What gaps were you looking to close over the off season?
Definitely, I think one. And mountain bikers, it's just so tough on the body. So that was definitely number one, I think. I wasn't as fresh towards the end of the season. I took a few massive hits, and I didn't really get the injury sorted as soon as I could have done. I guess I just thought, it'd be fine. But turns out they just got worse and worse. So if I had another injury, I'd attend to it a lot quicker and get it sorted a lot quicker so that I could be in better shape for the next race.
Okay, so you got plenty of work done over the winter. You spend a lot of time getting strong and working on some of those injuries from the last season. How did you feel coming into Lourdes? Were you feeling ready for a new season to start?
Yeah, definitely. I was a lot more prepared, I think. Well, saying that, one going into Lourdes last year, but the I think you can always do more. So I trained so hard that going into Lourdes, it felt almost natural. It felt a lot less stressful because I knew that I'd put the work in, and I'd done everything I could to be the best I could there and then. So yeah, the very positive feelings going into Lourdes.
Talk us through that weekend a little bit, kind of how it panned out for you. So maybe start with the track walk, and there were some new sections on the track this year, right? How did you feel when you saw those?
Yeah, a couple new sections. I love it when they change it up a bit because, I've only been on the circuit for, I think this is my sixth year now, so people have been racing for 20 odd years to go back to the same track every year. It's just tiring, and you need something. You need fresh parts in your mind to keep it fun and cool. So yeah, for me to see them, I really liked them. I thought they were great changes. It wasn't many and it was quite small sections, but yeah, they were positive changes for sure.
And a lot of line choice. On your track walk, are you kind of looking at those new sections and picking where you're going to go, or do you sort of have to wait for it to cut in a little bit and see what's happening before you can decide how it's going to work?
Yeah, I think Lourdes was taped one of the widest of tracks. So yeah, definitely a lot of line choice. It's hard on track walk to see where you're going to go, and it's funny because you always look at stuff and like, yeah, I'm going to hit that, and then it turns out when you're riding there's no way in hell that you're going to get that line. So it's just for track walk for me, I just look at stuff, just, you know, look at where I'm going to go, see what I'm going to ride, and then I'll do track walk the following day after practice, and that's when you can really start to look at things properly.
And how did practice go for you? Did you get on pretty well on the practice day?
Yeah, practice in the morning, so you can't really do much. You've just got to get on with it, I guess. But it's so hard. First World Cup, you have no idea what people have been up to all season. You have no idea how fit they are. And it's a really weird feeling being there and, you know, seeing everyone ride and stuff. But overall, I'm in shape, so I just had to stick with my guts and get through the weekend.
Wicked. And so time practice didn't look like you had the best time in time practice. Was there something up, or was it just not quite clicking on that particular session for you?
Was that time practice? Sorry, you cut out a little bit then.
Right. Yeah. In time practice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was funny because I never put down a time practice run because I'm too scared of what the result would be. So one of my mini goals at each World Cup was to say you've got to put a time run down, because each timed run you're going to do, you get faster throughout the weekend, and you don't know until you try. So I told myself that I had to do a full run, and it's really hard for me to get into that race mode without the beeps and without the atmosphere, without a warm-up. I'm just not that kind of rider to switch on when I don't need to. So in all honesty, it was the run was all right in itself. I gave up a bit, I think, because I just wasn't in the right mindset and I didn't go, you know, my last splits were horrific, but it gave me something to work on. And yeah, I turned it around for the following day.
So how do you take that kind of approach then and you know, gear yourself up for your finals run? Because it sounds like you take a very different approach in the practice sessions to the way you feel when you're actually in the gate. How do you turn everything on?
Yeah. I honestly, if I knew, I I would do it every round, and I would love to know where that switch is, but I don't, sadly. It's such a hard mental game. It's really tough to explain to people how tiring and how stressful a race weekend is. So after time practice, you know, I know I'm fit enough and I know I'm fast enough, but after time practice I went home and, you know, I couldn't stop asking everyone questions about where they were going, my teammates, brother, and I was like, oh, I'm just, you know, I'm 10 seconds back, it's awful. And then I got home, I even texted my boyfriend and I was like, it is shit, like, sorry for the swear, and I was just like, you know, it is, I've done crap. And he sent me a message and he said, T, the amount of times I've received this same message, he was like, you know you're going to put it together and you know you're going to kill it and you know you're faster than them. And every time, apparently, I didn't realize that every Friday after practice I send him a worried message saying that I'm not going to do well. And, you know, it's just, I think it's just normal. It's a normal chemical reaction in my brain that tells me that, you know, the time on the paper is what it is, and that's what's going to represent the weekend, but it's not true. So yeah, he gave me a good talk, a pep talk, and yeah, I was good to go.
Wicked. And I'm really interested to hear kind of how you feel, you know, fastest qualifier. You've obviously had a really good day in qualifying. You know, you're in the same position you were in Lourdes in 2016 as well, where you've out-qualified everyone. How does that kind of, is that a weight on your shoulders? Would you almost rather not be fastest qualifier? How does that feel?
Yeah, I think for me, I'd rather not, but, you know, points are included and whatnot. So you kind of, you don't really have a choice. And obviously, like, I don't, it's hard because I don't sit in the start gate and say, you know what, I'll be all right with a second or third. That's just not what I'm there for. So I sit there and, you know, I want to do the best I can. And I know that if I perform at my best, I know that I'm going to come out on top. So I don't know. I had a really good run, a few mistakes, but overall it was pretty good. It was a decent run and it was worth the fastest time. But before that, I had footpad. So, you know, I got really rushed and really panicked. And I saw, I think it was Tracy Hannah or Manon in the gate before me. So I had 30 seconds left and my elbow pads were still in the bag at the turbo. Oh, and I'm wondering whether that stress moment made me go faster or made me forget about my run or maybe, I don't know, maybe it worked in my favour.
Interesting. Do you think there was more in the tank from that time?
Yeah, I knew that, I just knew there was some stuff that I could do better. There always is. Yeah, I knew I think I was aiming to take 8 seconds off of that run. I probably could have done.
Wow, fair dues. Okay, interesting. So then, you know, we roll around to race day and you're in that probably unenviable position of being the last woman down the hill following Rachel out of the start gate. Talk us through that a little bit because, you know, that must be pretty stressful.
Yeah, gives me goosebumps just talking about it. It's, you know, I don't know. I've wanted to be in that position for so long in my life that being there just feels so unrealistic and so surreal. I wouldn't say unrealistic because I know that I deserve to be there because obviously the times have been put down, but it's just so surreal for me to be behind, you know, there's probably four riders in front of me that I've looked up to since I was, well, a kid. And you know, I grew up watching the World Cup feed on Freecaster. And I remember watching Rach win everything. And like, I remember watching Janan Caro race and then Manon who came in and who was a youngster and started killing it. And to be sat behind and being one of those girls, it's very, like, it's really emotional. So it's, as I say, like, it's just such a big mental game. And yeah, I've just got to learn how to control those emotions, I guess.
Do you do any work with a mental coach? I know I heard Loic Bruni recently talking about doing some work with coaches on that aspect of things. Is that something that you look at?
I haven't so far, only because I guess until now I haven't really had the need for it. But I guess at this level and yeah, this time maybe it's worth looking into. Well, I think it's definitely worth looking into.
Interesting. So what do you do? I mean, you come back from a race like that. You on one hand, you've had a pretty awesome weekend. You know, you've not hurt yourself. You're fastest qualifier. You know, you've had a good solid weekend, but you've probably not come away with the result that you personally went there to achieve. How do you, you know, reflect on that? What have the last few days looked like for you?
It is funny because a couple of years ago, you know, that result would have been, I would have been over the moon with it. I would have probably would have celebrated for 4 days straight. But it's funny because Manon came into my pits and me and Manon are good friends. And, you know, before she would have been like, oh, well done. Awesome. And she walked in, she was like, oh, are you okay? And it's just funny because she knew that I was so disappointed with what I'd done. Yeah, it was still a third place at a World Cup. You know, when you look at it from the outside and, you know, you open your mind up a little bit, it's actually a great achievement. But yeah, I wasn't there to get third place. So it's far from what I wanted. But overall, the weekend was really successful. So I take a couple of days to just breathe. I don't touch any bikes. I don't really look at anything online. I don't watch the replay. It's really hard for me to watch the replay, and I made myself watch it. I think it was only yesterday that I managed to get round to finally bite the bullet and watch it, but only because I know that there's you know, I've got to watch the other girls and learn from them and see where I went wrong.
Interesting. I noticed on your Instagram feed that you'd done a little bit of a journal on the weekend. Is journaling something that you use generally in life, and do you find it useful?
I think like every now and then I pick up a journal and write a page and think that I'll do it for the rest of my life, but I'm just not, I don't really. I love art and I love drawing and I've always loved design. So I think I've always, after a race, I've always just put down in my own words and just how I feel and how and what I can like improve, and just, I don't know, it's kind of relieving for me. It's just nice. I like doing it, and it's just a nice way to put all those crazy thoughts from my head on paper. And, you know, I can look back at it. If I have a crap race in future, I know that I felt good at Lourdes, so I can come and look back at it and be like, oh, that's what I did this weekend. You know, I just think it's a really good thing to have for future.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So what's going to be different with Fort William then? Will you approach things any differently as a result of how Lourdes went, or is it business as usual?
Hard to say, I guess, when, you know, I'm not put in that situation right now, but I know that the way I went into Lourdes was fine. There was nothing wrong with that. I think I've just got to believe a little bit more. Just trust in my ability, I guess, and, you know, be excited to be there and be excited. I'm terrible when it comes to performing in front of a lot of people, so Fort William for me is quite a hard one.
Yeah, big crowd, home race.
I can't exactly run away from it.
No, very true.
Yeah, no, I love what I do, and, you know, I've just got to tell myself that I'm there because I love it.
Very true. You said earlier that, you know, maybe a couple of years ago you'd have been really happy with that top three result. And look, you know, looking back on your results, it felt like a bit of a switch a couple of years ago, where you went from being, you know, a regular top 10 rider to frequently breaking into that top three. What do you think helped make that switch? You know, are there anything you could put your hand on that we'd say, you know, these sort of things fell into place and it helped me to move up that level?
Yeah, I think it's an odd one, because my first ever World Cup, I got fifth fastest at the first split, and I was out of all the elites, and I was, what, 16 at the time, and I had a big crash, and I think that knocked me back a little bit and brought me to, you know, take your own time, and you don't have to go in absolutely steaming and just, well, crash, because you don't really get anywhere. So I think I just kept chipping away, but there was one, I don't think it came in such a big leap as it seems, because to me, I had a lot of fifth places, a lot of fourth places. You know, I kind of just slowly chipped away at the winning time, I guess. And then got a load of second places. And I've been stuck there for a while now, which seems like forever. But no, I just kept going, I guess. Just keep going.
Interesting. And I mean, you surround yourself, you ride with some pretty fast people. You've got a fast family, as it turns out. Is that important? Yeah. do you think it's important for people to try and ride with people that are, you know, that are ideally quicker than them? Or
I'm not 100% convinced that that's the case, because Chaos and I, we hardly ride together. Like, we do every now and then, but it's not like Chaos goes out with his friends every day. I'll hardly touch my bike, and then every now and then I'll go out with my mate from around here. And, you know, it's just for fun. We have so much more fun than, I think, the switch was. It's when we were back in France and we lived in France, we couldn't ride all winter. So it felt more like a chore when we had to get out in the cold and the wet, and it was just horrible way to ride. And since we've been back in the UK, we've managed to find friends, and, you know, we're all just there to have fun, and we're all there to improve. So I think that's what's changed us most, is just really having the social side of riding.
Yeah, and you've got Revolution Bike Park pretty much on your doorstep, right? Has that been a helpful facility for you to have tracks like that available?
Yeah, for sure. Like it's so easy for us. It's 15 minutes away, and they put so much work into those tracks, and they're amazing. And we get a bit of everything. To be fair, really hard. Like they're not easy tracks, and the terrain is definitely an odd one. It's just slippery slate, so you do learn to ride in the toughest conditions, which is awesome. So we get to World Cups and we're like, this isn't slippery. So yeah, for us it's great. And we go there pretty much every weekend.
Awesome, nice. So I'm interested in what you guys do to warm up for a race run. So we get the little clip of a few people on turbo trainers at the top of the hill on the live feed, but I'm fairly sure there's a bit more to it than that. Can you talk us through the sort of stuff that you do in a warm-up for a race run?
Yeah, I'm always amazed at people that literally do just do the turbo and then jump on a downhill bike, because, you need the heart rate to go up. That's true, but you need to work your upper body. Like, there's just no way on a turbo that's going to get you warmed up enough for one downhill run and in like 4 hours, well, more than that most of the time. So I'm not convinced on just the turbo, so I'll do a little bit on that with a few sprints. I only spend like 10 to 15 minutes on it, and then I'll have a dynamic warm-up after that, which is literally top to toe, every muscle we can find, and Chris is usually there to guide me through it. Generally just lunges and like press-ups and all sorts of different stuff, but really got to get everything going.
That sounds pretty full on though. Is there any level of fatigue from that, or is it really just kind of an activation type thing?
It's more of an activation thing, but I definitely look at Chris sometimes and I'm like, right, I'm really tired now. Like, there's no way I'm going to be able to perform. But it's just, I think it's just your brain trying to tell you to stop because, you're stressed and you're scared and you're worried. But no, it's just enough to get you warm and snappy and get ready for the start.
And do you follow that kind of, maybe not with a turbo trainer, but do you do some kind of warm up before you ride every time you ride? Or is it a bit more laid back when it's a social jaunt?
If I was a perfect athlete and I was getting brownie points, I would say yes, but in all honesty, I don't. And Chris is going to hate me because I tend to forget. I think we all forget. When you're going out riding with mates, the last thing is some warm-up in front of them while they're waiting to get on the uplift. Yeah, I do try. We do try sometimes. And when Chris is there, we definitely do, but most of the time, it's a bad habit. Most of the time, I just get on the uplift and drop in.
I guess if you're riding up, then that helps. But if you're on uplifts, yeah, you're pretty cold dropping into the first run, I suppose.
Yeah, usually, if we're going for like an enduro ride, there's no way. There's enough pedaling as it is.
Awesome. So we're not going to see you in an enduro race in the near future then, Tani?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe.
You'd be tempted
Maybe
then?
I need to do one just because of all the tracks look sick. Yeah, I don't really have, I'm quite indifferent about them really. Like, I'm not bothered not doing them, but some of them look really fun, so yeah, I might give it a go.
Yeah, the Latwil one certainly looked amazing from, I think it was last season. The trails look fantastic.
Yeah, so did Finale in Italy.
Yeah, Finale is always a good place to ride. Cool. So bike setup then, let's talk a little bit about that. How do you work your way through, when you go and look at a course or through the track walk and start riding it in practice, what kind of things are you likely to be changing on your bike?
Usually all the little things like the positioning of the brakes and what else, seat and stuff like that is usually already dialed. But suspension, the tracks vary so much that sometimes it just, what you've been riding just isn't enough. So yeah, I'll come down, I think I'll start to go and see Fox and how I feel, how the bike feels, and Jordy works his magic. Yeah, Jordy's the magic man.
Excellent. So you guys spent a few days out in, was it Lusa with Jordy recently?
Yeah.
How did that go? Did you manage to find some seconds?
Yeah, because my bike's the same as last year. I didn't think there'd be much to change, but turns out I had to go up 2 spring meets and put some more air in my fork. So,
is that because you are heavier than last year? Is it because you're pushing the bike harder? Or a bit of both?
Just because I got stronger, I think. Yeah, I needed to go up the spring weights because of my weight, and I needed the air in the forks because of my weight also. So.
Interesting. How does Geordie work that out then? Is he running any telemetry on the bikes, or is he just looking at the way you guys are riding, or how does he work that out?
Well, he had all my base settings from last year, so that's a good starting point. And then literally he gets us to just sit on the bike and, you know, go in a riding position, and he sees how much sag we've got on the rear and on the front, and then he works out from there, because you're supposed to have, I think it's 30% sag when you're on the bike, so if there's too much or not enough, I'm guessing that's when he changes it.
Interesting. And it felt significantly different, I guess, then, because that's quite a big setup change.
Yeah, I was having some trouble. I kept saying to my mechanic, Matt, that I needed to go harder in the spring, just because it felt so slack, and I felt like I was dragging my heels on the floor. But we said we'd wait until Loser to get it properly done. And I was having some trouble. I was, you know, it was really kicky, and it was pushing me over the front almost. And I think a lot of people would probably think that that's because the spring's either too hard, or, you know, they'd slow down the rebound. But the reason was because I was pushing so far into it because I was on such a light spring that it would just ramp up, and then when it hit a bump, it would just absolutely. So it was quite funny. It was the opposite of what I thought. Obviously, I knew I needed to go harder, but I also thought that it was too fast, but it turns out it wasn't too fast. It was just literally just down to the spring rate.
Interesting. So you didn't have a huge amount of time on that new setup ahead of Lord's then, really?
No, we did 2 days, and then I rode my bike once before Lord's, but it's fine. I knew it was good. It was fine. I didn't need to make any changes. So yeah, it was obviously definitely worth going.
Good stuff. So there's obviously plenty of people out there in the sport that, you know, are starting to get into racing and look up to you. What kind of advice would you give to young people that are trying to make it in downhilling?
I get asked this one a lot, and, you know, I'm really crap at giving advice, because to me, all I've done is literally like chip away. You know, it feels like I've been at it forever. Sometimes it's demoralizing, it's depressing, because, you know, my goals still seem so far away. But I guess it's because I've, you know, it's so easy to say and it's said all the time, but it's because I haven't given up. I just haven't given up. And I think, you know, set goals and push until you get there. You know, you can't fanny about, you can't, you know, just expect the goals to come and it to lie in your lap. It's not going to happen like that. You have to work hard, and you have to go and chase those dreams.
Good advice. One more question. We've been asking this to quite a lot of people. If you had £100 to spend on something to kind of improve your riding, or something around riding, whether that be a bit for your bike or a gadget or whatever, what would you spend your £100 on?
That's a good question. What would I spend it on? Is this literally people who don't ride very often, or is it like, what situation are we in?
Well, I guess, yeah, someone who is into their riding and is looking to kind of make improvements or make their bike better or get fitter or whatever it happens to be, where would you suggest they kind of invested that money?
Well, I've always, you know, it's so dangerous. I've always been a big fan of, you know, good protection. So I would probably invest that money into a good helmet, I guess. So you know, there's so many out there that that are great for you, but I've seen some right states out in Morzine, you know, just like, oh, please don't crash. So I would definitely say a good full-face helmet. You know, don't go buy secondhand ones on eBay or whatever, because you just never know what that person has done with it. And, you know, sometimes there are interior cracks that you can't see. So,
yeah
I would definitely invest it on some good armour.
Excellent. Very sensible. It's the same answer that Tracy Mosley gave us. So the two of you are aligned on that one.
I'm a big fan of Tracy Mosley.
Very cool. She is a legend, that is for sure.
She is.
Good stuff. Well, thanks for your time today, Tani. If people want to keep in touch and follow you over the season, where can they find you on social media?
So I'm probably most active on my Instagram, which is just at Tani Seagrave. Or my Facebook athlete page, which is also just Tani Seagrave. So fairly easy.
Good stuff. Well, best of luck for the rest of the season. I'm excited to see how it goes for you. And thanks for taking the time out, Chris. And coming on.
No, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Well, that's it for episode 9. I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget to let us know what you think by commenting on social media, and help us spread the word by sharing and telling your friends. It's a busy week for us. We're off to Fort William. So keep your eyes peeled for a Fort William special edition of the podcast sometime next week. Until then, get out and ride.